welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this week's podcast, we examine what impact Seattle may have on the MLS media rights deal. We talk European Cup titles. We discuss the prospect of who may play the Sounders in the Club World Cup. And we answer the questions from you, the listeners. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Kyle Fansler. My name is Christopher Harris. And for those listeners who are new to this podcast, this is our weekly deep dive into soccer media, as well as the games we've been watching and kind of the main storylines when it comes to soccer. Now, Kyle, there's so much to choose from in terms of the Champions League. So you could take any Champions League, right? Fill in the blank. It could be UEFA Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League. I think the Asian Champions League is going on at the same time too. There's also the CAF Champions League. You've got Copa Libertadores, which is effectively the Champions League of South America. But what for you, if you had to pick out one story this week from a Champions League, which one would it be and why?
Well, you're right that there was a lot of Champions League to choose from. In terms of this past week, I don't think we're going to see much more drama than that, at least on a frequent basis, especially over, for example, three games. But if I had to choose one that stood out to me, and this is, of course, me coming as an American saying that Seattle's win in the CONCACAF Champions League, I think it's a huge deal, not just for Seattle, but for Major League Soccer as a whole. I mean, we've seen CONCACAF, or I should say, we've seen American teams win this competition before, back before it was officially dubbed the Champions League. It was a Champions Cup back then. And CONCACAF only started sending teams to the FIFA Club World Cup in 2005. So LA Galaxy and DC United, they both won before then, so they never got to go to a different country and play against the other winners of the Continental Championships. So now there is a real chance that Seattle will play a club like Liverpool or Real Madrid, depending on who wins the UEFA Champions League. So we've seen, you know, summertime friendlies, you know, MLS All-Stars playing, Bayern Munich, for example. But now there's a legitimate trophy. I mean, you look at the past Club World Cup, Chelsea fielded a full team in the 2021 FIFA Club World Cup. Do I think Seattle can win the competition? I'm going to say no. I mean, anything's possible, but no CONCACAF team has won the competition before. The best finish was from Tigres back in 2020. And that was a 1-0 loss against the treble-winning Bayern side from 2020. So anything's possible, but it would be a tall order for Seattle to pull that off.
So the weird thing, though, is that we don't know when the next Club World Cup is. So FIFA has not decided yet. I believe it's supposed to be in UAE, but maybe it's later this year. I think originally it was going to be in China, but nobody knows yet. But there will be a time and place where Seattle Sounders will be in that competition, as well as, you mean, either Real Madrid or Liverpool. And then you go through all the different kind of regional Champions Leagues around the world, and you bring in the winners into that competition. So, yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, I'll get into the media rights in a second, Kyle, but why is this a big deal? Other than this being the first time that a club from MLS has won this competition, and other than the prospect of playing possibly a Liverpool or Real Madrid, why is this a big deal? Are there other reasons?
I think it's just the fact that Major League Soccer over the last, I don't know how many years, you'll have a better understanding of how much it's grown, but there was such a gap between Major League Soccer and the rest of the world. Obviously, the whole retirement league pedigree that it gets because it brings on these old players from real competitions, but now it's Major League Soccer being a real competition. They're beating teams from other countries. So assuming the Club World Cup does happen, it would be Major League Soccer's real chance to show itself. I mean, Seattle obviously has been the cream of the crop in Major League Soccer over the last, I don't know, 5 years or 5 years, 10 years. No other team's been as consistent as Seattle, so I think if you're going to choose a representative, you'd want it to be the Sounders. So I'm trying to think of other reasons, but I think it's just a legitimate, you know, announcement that Major League Soccer is here, and hopefully they can make a stage on what we hope is a Club World Cup.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right there. It's this win gains MLS respect, and also elevates the perception of this league. So, you mean, it's one of those things that now MLS haters can't say, like, MLS has never won a CONCACAF Champions League. Well, yes, it has, finally. The big question is where does they go from here? So in terms of next season, do clubs and MLS become more competitive in this now that the monkey's off the back? And then next year too, you've got the League's Cup. So you've got a whole month of competitions between Liga MX clubs and clubs from MLS. The leagues are shutting down effectively in the summer of 2023, and we'll see some more battles between the teams. And it was a good game, and it was great to see Seattle with a sold-out crowd. What was it, 68,000 people, fans going crazy, great passion, great game, and actually over both legs, a great final. And it's one of those things, though, too. So the media rights side of things, this does come at a good time because, MLS is still negotiating with the different partners out there, broadcast partners, trying to find a deal, trying to figure out a way to make this work. And this does come at a perfect time in terms of elevating the league, increasing the perceived value of the League's Cup, featuring the Liga MX clubs, and kind of elevating the league as a whole. So that's good timing by Seattle Sounders to win it for MLS. And the strange thing, though, about this one, the second leg of the final was on FS1. It's a must-win game. Whoever wins, wins the competition. And on this one, it was, I think, about, basically the average viewing audience on this one, on the English language, FS1 was 300,000 people watched this game. It's not a massive number, it's not a tiny number, but out of that 300,000, approximately, about, I think, 179,000 people of those were watching it from Seattle. So you had, basically 120,000 odd people watching this game from around the rest of the country. So effectively, unless everyone was watching the Spanish language broadcast, it kind of sends a message that, if Seattle's not your team, and you support a different club in MLS, or you don't support a club in MLS, or you're a neutral, there's not a lot of interest in it. Now, maybe that they've won it, maybe next season it will make a difference. But I think the MLS TV deal, the one that's coming up, that they're still negotiating, starting in 2023 onwards, really the sweet spot with that is the Spanish language audience. I mean, that's really the sweet spot of, I think, what MLS is going for. Yes, definitely they want to grow that English language side, but the Spanish language is key to that. Now, Kyle, that was the CONCACAF Champions League. We had the UEFA Champions League this week. Anything that stood out? Well, actually, and of course, Europa League and the UEFA Europa Conference League. Anything out from those games or those matches that stood out for you?
I think the better question would actually be what from those games didn't stand out. I mean, each game, it seemed, had drama, had late goals or big saves, big moments. I mean, from each competition, it wasn't just like, that Manchester City Real Madrid game, that was full of drama, that was a good week of watching soccer. No, it was the Liverpool game, Villarreal early on pushing Liverpool to the brink, but then obviously Liverpool's class kind of came in clutch for them. Then I mentioned the Real Madrid game, and then you look at the Europa League, the Eintracht Frankfurt fans storming the field. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a Barcelona fan, and I really did not like all the Frankfurt fans in Camp Nou. I'm not saying it was their fault. It was definitely Barcelona's fault that happened. But, I mean, it really just, I didn't like them for a little bit. And now I'm just like, wow, that's a club that fully deserves to be in these finals. And at first, my reaction to the Europa Conference League, I didn't like it. I thought it was just another ploy by UEFA to make some more money. But, I mean, you see Feyenoord and Roma, two teams that obviously have a lot of pedigree. It's going to be a great final. I know it's not, the small teams everyone was imagining, some small team from Norway playing a team from Albania, for example. No, it's two teams that have experience, have success at the domestic level, at the European level. I mean, each of the games that we watched on Thursday was just awesome. I mean, the Rangers game against RB Leipzig really stood out. That game had good goals. It had drama. I mean, the fans there were just going bananas at that. I think it was like the 86th minute that the Rangers grabbed the lead. It was just that was a lot of fun to watch. I would say that game was probably the highlight of me watching outside of the 90th minute antics at the Santiago Bernabeu.
Yeah, so that's the common thread this week, and of course coming out of the pandemic, or mostly that is the common thread is fans and what a difference they made, because it makes a massive difference to watching the game. And yes, we saw some fantastic football on the pitch. And probably there's some other podcasts out there that go deep dive into the kind of the tactical matchups and the players, the one-on-ones, etc. But you look at Villarreal and their fans going nuts in that small stadium on Tuesday. On Wednesday, you had the Seattle fans going nuts on Wednesday night. And then Thursday, of course, like you mentioned, the Rangers fans, the Frankfurt fans, Feyenoord fans, AS Roma fans, etc., etc., etc. That was something that really made those games come alive. And it does impact the players on the pitch. The game that was that should have been the biggest kind of fan fest, so to speak, would have been Real Madrid against Man City in the second leg. But, I hate that top. Top on that bottom lower level in the Santiago Bernabeu. I know that the stadium is still under construction. Kyle, you're a Barcelona fan. Barcelona, I think next season, are going to be playing a lot of games away because they're going to be redeveloping their stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just hate that because from a TV viewer perspective, you could hear the fans, the Madrid fans, but you couldn't really see them. And it felt like it was almost like going back to during the pandemic, watching games from the Bundesliga where there'd be no fans in the stadium. It wasn't that bad, but that's what it reminded me of, seeing that top.
Yeah, I think the biggest shame about the Real Madrid one is just because that section where Rodrigo scored those two goals in the 90th and 91st minute, that's right where their biggest supporter group is. Everyone's wearing a white shirt. Everyone's going crazy. And it would have been great to see the reaction there. Like I already mentioned, the Frankfurt fans' reaction, the Rangers fans' reaction. I imagine it would have been similar, if not more dramatic, at the Bernabeu had all those fans been there. But yeah, that tarp is it's an eyesore. I get why they're doing it. They're making that stadium nice, but just for this season, I don't know when it's going to finish. But yeah, I'm excited to have that little eye blemish go away.
So what I find interesting is that we now have three European Cups to look forward to. So in the past, we used to have the European Cup and UEFA Cup, and those competitions morphed into the current UEFA Champions League and the UEFA Europa League. And now, like you mentioned, Kyle, something that we thought was a cash grab, and it is in a way still, but with the addition this year of the UEFA Europa Conference League, it's a tongue twister, but we now have a third title, and now we know who the finalists are. I mean, so for that Conference League final, Feyenoord against AS Roma, you mean two massive fan bases, very passionate fan bases. And of course, you've got Rangers against Eintracht Frankfurt, and then Liverpool against Real Madrid. And it's games over basically 10 days, three massive finals. The Rangers Eintracht Frankfurt game is going to be on, I believe, CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus. The Feyenoord against AS Roma will be on Paramount Plus, and then Liverpool against Real Madrid on big CBS as well as Paramount Plus, I'm sure. So big games to look forward to there. You mean the Rangers Eintracht Frankfurt game? The only concern I have there is over fans. I mean, both. You couldn't have picked a better fan base for both of those for the finalists. I mean, Rangers at Ibrox Stadium, those fans are going nuts. Eintracht Frankfurt at the stadium there in Germany, they were going nuts too. So to have those packed into one stadium, the final is going to be, I think, in Sevilla. And they're already, we've got an article at worldsoccertalk.com that's talking about the airlines are booking, basically setting up extra flights for all the German fans. I can't imagine how many fans are going to be in Sevilla, even non-ticketed fans, just to be there to watch this game. And that's just a Europa League final, a competition that in the past was, I mean, to be honest, people would refer to it as a joke.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. I'm sure all the fans are going to be safe. Frankfurt fans, I mean, they're phenomenal. I mean, they would not cause any issues. I'm sure Rangers fans can do the same thing. But I like how it's two teams that we're not used to seeing this situation. Like, Chris, you and I joked about how, you know, it's a little monotonous seeing Sevilla play in the Europa League final every year. I mean, to see six teams in these three finals from six different countries, it's pretty special. I mean, you look at Rangers, Eintracht Frankfurt, like I said, two teams that aren't always there. Feyenoord, AS Roma, like same thing. You know, some domestic success. Obviously, Feyenoord won a treble, in the 80s. And then the Champions League final, no surprises there. It's just England's most successful side in the competition against the most successful side in the competition. So that, in terms of the flights out there and the fans, I encourage that. I think it's great to have as many people there as possible, make a whole celebration out of it, because when's the next time we're going to see Rangers play Eintracht Frankfurt in a major European final?
Yeah, and to be honest to you, and to be very fair to Rangers, usually Scottish fans are some of the most well-behaved, really, I mean, they go in numbers, like to have a drink and two or two and sing a song and be merry. It's not like it's, former West Ham United kind of hooligans, kind of Green Street hooligans or anything like that. Eintracht Frankfurt are really passionate, and they go out in numbers. Mm-hmm. Those games are going to be great to watch.
Yeah.
All right, let's see, Kyle. Looking at this weekend's matches, speaking of games to watch, what's your recommendation of what to watch this weekend?
I went back and forth on this one between a game in the Premier League, but I ended up choosing the Madrid derby. I mean, everyone knows that Real Madrid obviously won the La Liga this season. I mean, they were by far the best team in Spain, especially with Atletico and Barcelona struggling. But Atletico Madrid, they have all to play for in this game. I mean, obviously everyone wants to beat their rival, and Atletico Madrid's going to treat this game like a final pretty much because they're playing Real Madrid. But you look at the league table in Spain, Atletico Madrid has a 3-point lead over Real Betis, who plays Barcelona this weekend, which is also a pretty good game. But Atletico Madrid, they've struggled a little bit over the last couple of weeks, I think getting knocked out of the Champions League against Manchester City in that whatever you want to say happened at the end of that second leg. That really kind of put a damper on the whole season. Now they're kind of limping into the finish. It's an important game, obviously, for Champions League qualification, but more so it's a derby, and everyone loves a derby. That game's on Sunday at 3 p.m. on ESPN+, the Madrid derby. Should be a good one.
So this week, I went out for dinner one night, and I ran into a couple that I know, that are friends of ours, and he mentioned, basically the dad mentioned, like, hey, my dad's here, he's a huge soccer fan, so I started talking to him, and he's just a typical average American, and so we started talking about soccer, and he's new to soccer, and I said to him, like, so who's your team? And he said, I don't really have one, I just enjoy watching it. But then he said, I just love Leeds United. I was like, wow. And I've heard that from a lot of people this season too, because we had a poll on Twitter, I think the Wolf Soccer Talk Twitter account last weekend, and said, like, hey, unfortunately, if we had to pick one between Everton and Leeds United, which of the two teams would you want to see relegated? And the vast majority of people said Everton, just because Leeds United plays a really attacking style of play, fun to watch, lots of goals, sometimes conceding lots of goals, great fan base, and that's what he was kind of connected to. So for my game to watch this weekend, originally I was going to say Arsenal against Leeds United on Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. I still think that's going to be a great game to watch, mm-hmm. And I think Arsenal's a little bit inconsistent. So I mean, Leeds, I mean, they need points, and it's getting close at the end of the season. And Everton winning last week, and Burnley winning too, is putting Leeds into a precarious position if they weren't there already. But my game to watch this weekend is Verona against AC Milan on Sunday, almost at the same time, Kyle, as your game, is the Madrid derby. Yours starts at 3, mine starts at 2:45. Eastern time, and it's on CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus, and it's the title race. It's we're recording this on Friday. Inter's playing today, and that could have ramifications on the title race, but it's going down to the wire, and AC Milan has a good chance. So I'm going to watch it and see, watch the action unfold, and hope for a great game.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think most people would say the game of the week this weekend is Liverpool-Tottenham, because you talk about title races, that's obviously got a massive implication on title race, but yeah, that should be a good one as well, that game in England, because Tottenham's, what, fifth? I think they're 2 points behind Arsenal right now for that fourth spot in the Premier League, so that game's got all kinds of consequences from it.
Yeah, and that one's a late one too, so mm-hmm. It's you've got the, I think it kicks off either 2:45 p.m. or 3 p.m. on Saturday, you mean after the 12:30 Eastern yep. time kickoff game, so yeah, that's going to be on fire for sure. All right, speaking on fire, let's move on to Listener Mailbag. First up is Drew, who has a really good question, and this is in the Listener Mailbag. Drew says, in regards to promotion relegation, you guys mentioned how the Premier League's relegation race is a big part of the league's attractiveness to fans. why do you guys think that relegation races in other leagues such as La Liga, Bundesliga, and Serie A don't get anywhere near the attention that the Premier League does? I was thinking about this because all of the leagues I mentioned here have very close relegation races that are going down to the wire. So, Kyle, I'll ask you this question first. Like, any thoughts on why more attention is paid to the Premier League relegation race?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of a logical answer, and honestly, I can't really think of one outside of the fact that the Premier League just has more popularity. I mean, I think this relegation race in the Premier League right now has Everton in it, and Everton's been in the Premier League since it has been around, pretty much. I've been in the first division for who knows how long. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of actual other reasons, and I'm drawing blanks right now, but hoping you have something for me, Chris.
Yeah, I think it's basically because we care. I mean, we have an attachment to these teams, even if we don't support them, and most of the listeners probably don't support these teams. But you look at Norwich, and it's a yo-yo club, and after a while it gets a little bit predictable, the situation that they go in. But they're a fun team to watch. But we know them, right? We know Norwich City. We know Carrow Road. We know Josh Sargent. We know Pookie. We have a knowledge of that team that we've, not that we're intimate with, but at least we know. We may not care 100%, but we know who they are and what they're capable of doing. And maybe they might win a few games and finish. Maybe they don't finish bottom, right? They're relegated already. They're done. But then you look at Watford, and then you look at Roy Hodgson and everything that he's been through and the clubs he's been to and managed, Liverpool, England, etc. Crystal Palace, of course. And a lot of those players, I mean, Watford on their day can be a really entertaining team to watch. But again, we know those players for the most part. I mean, we see the potential there. And again, it's a yo-yo club again too, but we're familiar with them. And then you go into, whether it's Everton, Leeds, or Burnley, and Burnley's not everyone's favourite team, but they're battling. And ever since Sean Dyche left the club, they've actually gone on a run. They've actually gotten better under Jackson. So it's a team we know. Turf Moor, the stadium, you mean the history. So I think that's it at the end of the day. So I don't know, off the top of my head, La Liga, I would imagine that Mallorca is near the bottom, towards the bottom. But I'm not looking at the bottom of the table. I'm looking at the top of the table, or kind of the Europa League spots, or the Champions League spots. The Bundesliga is a little bit different in that they have a relegation playoff. So there is kind of a little bit of overlap there between the clubs going down and the clubs trying to get up. That makes it a little bit different, a little bit more exciting. So that's one I pay attention to a little bit more closely, but it's usually not until that relegation playoff match. Now, Kartik, if he was on this podcast today, he'd probably say, like, hey, yeah, these teams, blah, blah, blah. You mean, whether it's Augsburg or et cetera. Serie A, I mean, usually the teams near the bottom are those smaller clubs that aren't those, I mean, really big stories. They're not. I mean, so I don't have an attachment to the clubs near the bottom of the Italian league or the German league or La Liga, really. So I think that's what it is. I mean, part of this goes into what NBC has done since 2013, and even before that with Fox Sports, etc., where we've been watching, we have skin in the game. We've been watching these teams for years. We know the history of them. We can talk about them for about a good hour if we sat down with a pint of beer at the bar. I don't think we can do that. Most of us cannot do that for the Bundesliga, La Liga, and Serie A. And you look at, I mean, the French league. You can look at all the leagues in Europe. And from time to time, there is an interesting relegation story, but it's far removed. All right, next up is in regards to last week's podcast, we talked about soccer audiences being splintered into hundreds of different fan bases. JP says the fractured issue extends beyond soccer. There are simply fewer things that become shared cultural events or water cooler fodder in our age of streaming and viewing on demand, with algorithms suggesting what you should watch based on your viewing habits. We're all in our own world now. News, entertainment, etc. all succumb to this. Sports are most immune so far, but with soccer on the leading edge of the switch to streaming and all the various leagues to follow rather than just one for most American-based sports, it is most noticeable here. The days of only having Fox Soccer Channel and getting what they give you are long gone. Back then, soccer fans were likely all watching the same games. The Premier League with over-the-air and cable presence will still dominate the viewing, while other leagues go behind the streaming paywall and out of sight, out of mind, except for the most dedicated fans like those of us who frequent World Soccer Talk. Yeah, good points there by JP. Does anything ring true there for you, Kyle, or anything that you disagree with, perhaps?
No, I don't think I disagree with anything. I think it's true that soccer is really leading this switch to streaming. I mean, you look at, because I watch a lot of hockey and basketball and baseball, and, you know, they're putting exclusive games on Apple TV Plus, for example, or ESPN Plus, and soccer's been doing that for so long just because they couldn't get on, like, actual, like a TV channel, for example. So I think JP's right that soccer is leading it, so there's going to be so much diversity in terms of what we are able to watch, so we're going to have to develop our own preferences, and obviously JP mentions the algorithms that are going to say, oh, you watched this previously, why don't you try watching this? Like, I'll go to my ESPN app on my phone or my TV, and it'll show me the Barcelona game, but then I'll scroll down a couple pages even, and then I'll start seeing the Bundesliga games. So, you know, with everything getting so much more personalized, I think it's funny that JP mentions that we were all watching the same matches back in the day, and that is such a rarity now.
Yeah, I think also part of this too is just the number of choices available. If you look back, say, 20 years ago, or maybe even longer than that, with music, I mean, if you were watching, basically a music fan, you were probably watching MTV, and you'd see the same, I mean, dozen or so videos playing all day long. And you'd have your radio stations, you'd be hearing pretty much the same songs. But these days with, I mean, Spotify and other ways to listen to music, there's so many choices that if you sat down with somebody and said, like, hey, what's your favorite music? Chances are, I mean, you and I might have completely different tastes or different things that we're listening to, even if it's really current music. So much choices, and that's part of the reason why I think that the audience is so splintered. Roberto says, last week's podcast presented a real contradiction. I agree with what Don Garber said all those years ago. There is too much world soccer on television in the United States. It is also true that people can and will watch the games that interest them. No other country in the world has so many choices that has for sure weakened MLS's position with media outlets. In every other country, their own leagues are prime. Here it is. It's been cool to be a supporter of the super rich Premier League teams, also some Barcelona and Bayern fans and others. If as was stated on the podcast, these are the teams talked about at work, that is a problem. This fracturing, like Humpty Dumpty, cannot be put together again. Yeah, I think at this point, I mean, you look at, say, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, PSG to some extent, and there's no stopping them in terms of, I mean, again, like, I mean, I go to pick up my kids from school and I'm looking at all the soccer jerseys that the kids are wearing. It's Juventus, it's Barcelona, it's a US men's national team shirt, it's a US women's national team shirt. I'm not seeing MLS shirts at all. I mean, it's extremely rare to see them. Kyle, what about you? So you're in Tampa, near Tampa, Florida. Do you see a lot of Orlando City shirts or any other shirts from MLS?
MLS shirts, no. I mean, you already mentioned you'll see, for example, Real Madrid and Barcelona shirts. I see a lot of those. I mean, I walk down downtown St. Pete, and they're everywhere. But Orlando City shirts, there's none. Tampa Bay Rowdy shirts, there's none. It's a hurdle that MLS has to overcome. I'm not sure how they do it. I mean, the U.S. is in a pretty precarious spot just because everything's so spread out. There's so many teams in Major League Soccer, so in my eyes, such a geographic thing. I mean, I don't see people in Nashville, for example, wearing a Tampa Bay Lightning shirt. The only reason I bring up the Lightning because they played tonight in the playoffs. So it's hard for MLS. I don't know how they overcome it. I mean, Roberto says there's too much world football on TV in the U.S., and I think that's true, but it's a give and take, I think, because Are we going to be forced to watch Major League Soccer? I mean, sure, it would grow the league, but at the same time, everybody wants to watch the best players, which right now is in Europe, and hopefully one day that kind of shifts over to the U.S. We're already kind of seeing that trend start up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the freedom of choice to choose what we want, which is pretty powerful, but it does make it difficult for the old world where there were very few choices, and MLS was one of the leagues that was at the time, other than Liga MX, most accessible. You could switch on ESPN perhaps in the early 2000s, late 1990s, and see MLS games, and those got really big viewing numbers, but there wasn't an opportunity for the most part to watch all these games from all these leagues from around the world. Dave says fragmentation and customization are driving many changes in society, and soccer is no exception. Today, two serious soccer fans can have zero overlap in games and shoulder programming consumed during a week. There are pros and cons, and it is interesting to hear your perspectives on the dynamic. You described soccer fans getting mad over what makes a true soccer fan. I find arguing about personal preferences weird unless there is a zero-sum dynamic such that not everyone's preferences can be fulfilled. A true soccer fan spends their entertainment time and money on soccer. Why would any fan be upset that another fan enjoys different soccer? College basketball strikes me as very fragmented. Just in the men's game, there are 350 D1 teams, each playing 30 games per week, roughly about 5,000 games over 4 to 5 months. Most are on TV or streaming, and fans often follow different leagues and teams. But there are so many dimensions to soccer, league versus cup versus international, multiple countries, multiple languages, etc., such that I think soccer wins as most fragmented. And lastly, Chris Guardino says, when it comes to the topic of other sports that have a fan base as fractured when it comes to viewership as soccer does, I would have to say baseball is up there too. This is mainly because there is a generational split among fans, with older fans wanting the game to remain largely the same, which includes having games remain on cable, regional sports networks, and over-the-air television. On the other hand, there are younger fans that want rule changes to make the game go faster, for example, a pitch clock, as well as more streaming options to watch games, for example, Apple TV Plus, due to cutting the cord on cable. Major League Baseball is having a difficult time finding the right balance so that both generations of fans are happy and teams are still making money. It should be pointed out that these sets of fans are watching the same on-field product, but have differing views on it. Yeah, so really good points by Chris, and actually all of the feedback on the list of the mailbag. I think it's one of those things. So the average age of a baseball fan is, I think it's almost 60 years old. I mean, it's a lot higher than soccer, and the average age of a soccer fan, if I remember, it's something like, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s. It's a big difference. So I don't think we in soccer we get that generational gap as much. I think, yes, there's been obstruction or kind of basically obstacles from a lot of kind of older watchers or viewers of soccer where they don't want to change and move to streaming. But once they do move to streaming, I think then they see the benefits of it because there's more choice and more games available. All right. So listeners, if you have any questions for us about streaming, watching the game, or any of the feedback that we've mentioned today, or any questions you may have, definitely get in touch with us. You can reach us via email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, twitter.com/worldsoccertalk, plus, of course, on the podcast thread at worldsoccertalk.com. So, Carl, before we go, any stories you're working on that are of interest? Anything that you've published this week or going to be publishing next week that you think listeners might be interested in reading your in-depth articles at the site?
In-depth articles, there's one that Chris and I, you and I both know we've been sitting on this one for a while. It's about Erling Haaland. You know, will he, won't he go to Manchester City? It seems all but confirmed that he's going there. And wow, what a benefit he would be to their problem scoring goals. Well, I guess it wasn't a problem in the first leg against Real Madrid, but it was in the second leg. No, really what we've been working on is just like we want to be more interactive with the readers, lots of questions about their experience watching soccer, how they got into the game, stuff like that. So that's been fun to read all those comments on the website. Always good to hear about people's opinions on soccer, especially when it's things like what's the best goal or what's the best game they've seen in their entire lives.
Yeah, the one that I'm really interested in is the best match atmosphere in the Premier League, and that's at the site right now too. So you can always, listeners, check that out and give us your vote on that one. But without stealing your limelight, spotlight, so to speak, Kyle, I mean, the story that you're working on about Erling Haaland, and you're right, Manchester City need him more than ever.
Yeah.
But what about Christopher Nkunku? I mean, Haaland's had injury problems, right? His form hasn't been the greatest this season because of the injuries. Nkunku for RB Leipzig, I mean, would he be a better fit for Man City, perhaps?
For Manchester City, I'd probably lean towards no, just because Nkunku, generally speaking, plays more as a winger. And you look at Manchester City's options that they could put on the wing, you know, Riyad Mahrez, Jack Grealish, sure he's had an offseason, but he's a young talent, still could definitely blossom into something better. Bernardo Silva, they got all these talents that could go on the wings. I think what they need is just an out-and-out goal scorer, someone that can win the ball in the air. I think Erling Haaland is just like if you were to draw something in your head, it would turn out like Erling Haaland. I think Christopher Nkunku would serve any team that he goes to. I don't see him staying at RB Leipzig next season just because I think he starts on virtually any team in Europe right now based on form alone. Been my player of the Europa League, even though RB Leipzig just got knocked out. I mean, he thrived in the Champions League as well in the group stage. He's been just a joy to watch, and we've been keeping an eye on him since the beginning of the season. I think all of our expectations on him, despite already being lofty, were blown away.
It's funny too, because like now and again I'll dabble in trading cards, like soccer trading cards and stickers. And at the beginning of the season, we had a story by one of our writers, Diallo, who posted a story, I think it was the beginning of the season, probably September, about Christopher. And at that time, I started buying a whole bunch of the Cuckoo's trading cards. And those cards now, I bought them for just a few bucks. And now I think they're in the, I don't know, $50, $60, $100. The value's gone up big time. And I'm sure the value of him in the transfer market is going to go up big time. That's such a pure player. And like, yeah, you mentioned winger, but I think they're really developing him into more of a forward. I mean, a different type of forward, but what a player.
I mean, the goal he scored against Rangers on Thursday, that was a striker's goal for sure. That little over-the-shoulder volley into the far corner, I mean, what a finish that was. It didn't end up being the difference in the end. But,
yeah, and anyone who's played the game knows how difficult that is. I mean, even to make contact, but to make the contact the way he did and in the back of the net, oh, what a goal. So, if you missed it, check out the highlights on that one from Rangers, RB Leipzig. All right, heading into another big weekend of soccer. Of course, we've got the title races in Italy as well as in England, going championship on Saturday. There's games on Saturday morning on ESPN+. We will find out the final teams that will go into the playoffs in the championship. Fulham and Bournemouth already promoted. And of course, there's the relegation battle, as well as lots of big games from around the world and around the leagues. So enjoy your football.